questions. Terry talked me into coming. I missed the first one. And then I started with the second one. My first camp, I can say my first camp, mm-hmm. It reminded me of the years when I was growing up in Kodiak before I was married or anything. It reminded me how much fun it is to be with the people, a lot of the people I grew up with, mm-hmm. and plus all their relatives. It seems as though around here, if we're from here, if I see someone from Akiak or Karluk, or even if I don't know them, mm-hmm. We can visit and communicate as if we were old pals all our life or something. Mm-hmm. And when I came to this camp, I just had a wonderful feeling of how good it was for me when I was young to be able to grow up in a place like this, and then how to be reminded of that coming to this camp. It was just excellent. Mm-hmm. The ladies fixing meals, you know, fish and so forth, and doing their thing with the kids, and then the men helping the kids do things. Mm-hmm. It made me think about my growing up and who were the influences in my life. And I never thought about it before. Mm. All uncles.
Oh, okay.
I was always with an uncle or my godfather, and they're the ones that let me borrow their tools and took me out in the boats, taught me how to row a skiff. And that's kind of the way the camp was set up, was that, you know, we could talk to these kids that were strangers, and they would listen to me, and, you know, maybe they'd argue with their dad or something or mom, but they didn't do that with us because we were strangers. Mm-hmm. And it's different, you know. So I loved it. That first year was very emotional for me, because I remember when we had this circle out there on the beach before we left, mm-hmm. I actually started crying because it was such a good feeling. And I hadn't done that ever before in front of a bunch of people like that. And Terry did too, of course. Mm-hmm. But, okay. How far off did I wander from what you wanted to know?
Oh, this is just wonderful.
So I found that I did not grow up in, I was not really taught the subsistence lifestyle or any of that stuff. But when I thought back about my growing up, one of the biggest things that it showed me was that I was taught by uncles and stuff. Mm. And that's the native way. Mm-hmm. It was the mother's brothers or something? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was basically my mother's brothers and a man that was married to one of my mother's sisters, who I always called, you know, Uncle Bill, it was really neat. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. So I didn't know how to do anything. I never made a bow, mm-hmm. an arrow set before. I never really carved a mask or any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately started watching Dennis and hanging out with Dennis. Mm-hmm. And just by observing and trying it, and I started catching on a little bit, like those little traps. Mm-hmm. I knew how to make them, but I wasn't really sure about how to make them work good because mm-hmm. I never really practiced that.
Right.
So that's what we did yesterday, uh-huh. and bingo, started catching squirrels.
Yes.
So then last winter, mm-hmm. a byproduct of this camp was they had a mask carving class at the college last winter. And Patrick and I went to that for,
what
was it, a month or 2 months or something like that. And Dennis uh-huh. was there, uh-huh. and so Jim Dillard was there, and of course Bonnie would be in and out. Mm-hmm. So then we all made masks and stuff,
wow.
and so it was cool.
Mm.
Fun, just walking around and helping these kids, and a lot of them will come and ask something, mm-hmm. and if I can help them, I do. It's fun.
What did Terry told you first? How did she manage to have you in the camp?
To come to the camp?
Yes. What did she?
Her leverage was, so she wanted me, mm-hmm. because Patrick was still fairly small, she wanted me to keep an eye on him for her.
Oh, I see.
That was her thing.
Uh huh.
So, and the first camp they didn't have any kids.
Oh, well, that's right, teachers.
So the second year, uh-huh. they were going to have kids. The elders uh-huh. at the first camp said, kids should be here.
Mm-hmm.
So then she says, okay, Dad, you have to come to the camp. I want you to help me with Patrick because I'm going to be too busy.
Mm-hmm.
So I reluctantly said, okay, and that was the best move I've made in a long, long time.
Oh, I see.
It's great.
So that was the first year, when you first came in here, it was the first year with kids.
Right.
So it's kind of
correct.
First year of science camp then.
Yes, actually.
I see. Mm-hmm. But so the whole thing that Terry asked you to do is to keep eye on
Patrick.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think it's, like now the environment that surrounds those kids at their home, say Kodiak, some kids are from Old Harbor,
right.
lots of them. Is that like they're not taught by uncles anymore? When you were growing up, you're taught by, a lot of things are done with uncles and...
More so in the village than in Kodiak.
Mm-hmm.
In Kodiak, all they care about is going to Walmart and stuff like that, mm-hmm. most of them. Old Harbor is much, much better. The grandpas and uncles and stuff take them out subsistence fishing, mm-hmm. hunting,
mm-hmm.
And they do it pretty regular in those villages.
Nowadays too?
Yes. Not much in Kodiak, a mm-hmm. few, but not very much.
So you think that the kids from Kodiak especially, it's important for them to be exposed in this kind of atmosphere.
One of the biggest things I see in this camp mm-hmm. is not one single kid since I've been coming to camp complained about not having his radio or stereo here.
Mm.
I mean that's the first thing they're told. Like the kid come in the other day with his stereo, and I met him at the door when he was getting ready to walk in, and I saw what he had, and I says, "You can't have that in here. Go away."
Mm-hmm.
And he never did use it. He took it back and put it in his dad's tent over there.
Right.
And his dad didn't know he brought it ashore.
Right.
And these kids, generally from the camps I've been to, they are so busy.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on their projects, or they spend the whole day trying to figure out how to get around doing their project. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get a break, they go to the swings. If the weather's anything at all nice, they want to go swimming.
Mm-hmm.
They are so busy. Mm-hmm. You never see a kid sitting in here. I'm the only one that comes in here and sits in here.
Mm-hmm.
they're out playing together and stuff, and Old Harbor kids are playing with Yuzinki kids, Kodiak kids, Larson Bay kids, and it's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And all the conveniences of home are forgotten while they're here, I think. And it reminds me of when I was growing up.
Is that right?
Because we didn't have anything like that in those days. Mm-hmm. And we had a few hours of radio and stuff in the evening or something like that, or maybe a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And everything that we got on the radio was old. You know, we never got new music or anything. Mm-hmm. So all we worried about was, do we have to go to school? Why can't we just stay out and play? The worse the weather was, the more chance there was the school was going to close for a day or so we could go out and play. That's what we did. and to me, this is very similar. Mm. Very similar.
In your opinion, what is the advantage of it? And then advantage of that environment?
It encourages a kid, a boy or a girl, to figure out how to solve a problem. If they're afraid of the water, if the other kids go walking in the water with all their clothes on, there's a pretty good chance that before the camp is over, that kid that's a little afraid of water is going to start at least going into the water, for example, mm-hmm. getting wet with the rest of them. Mm-hmm. It gives them a challenge of getting along with the rest of the kids. There's always a kid or two that is really fouled up emotionally or something that's mm-hmm. going to make it hard on the rest of the kids. Mm-hmm. But they learn to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And on these science projects, they're not given a choice, starting off at least, of whether they can do it or not. They're given all the help that there is available to help them get into their project and get going. Mm-hmm. So most of them at least start. Mm-hmm. A few finish. And it gives them an opportunity to have a little more confidence in themselves mm-hmm. because they find out that it's not so hard. Mm-hmm. And if they really wanted to, they could finish. Mm-hmm. And of course, if the camp was longer or they were, mm-hmm. I think if they were thrown into this thing more often, I think they would have more of a tendency to finish mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think it really helps them have confidence in themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're away from their mom and dads, most of them.
Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a huge thing in a kid's life, I think. And it, mm-hmm. and if they can come out here with all of us strangers together in a room like this and deal with all of these things that come up, like Patrick's Boy Scout camp was the first one he went without any parents or grandpa or anything, mm-hmm. and he did really well. Mm-hmm. It's excellent for that. And I give a lot of hugs and stuff. I like to go put my arm around the kid and mm-hmm. Ask him how he's doing and stuff, and they really like that. Mm-hmm. As much. One of the things I learned about kids, and I've been involved in kids' sports and stuff mm-hmm. from the time Terry and them were small, mm-hmm. my kids. And I found out that kids want discipline. Mm. And they respond to that really nicely. I've had some real challenges. Mm-hmm. On my basketball teams and stuff, and I never had one single kid I couldn't handle that didn't wind up learning from it. Mm. A lot of love and being very firm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You're one of the team. You're not just you.
Mm-hmm.
You're only on a basketball team. You're only one of five out on net four,
mm-hmm.
and all five have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And really stress that teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how these kids help each other.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an older kid that knows anything about carving or anything about fish,
mm-hmm.
or ulus or anything,
mm-hmm.
these kids, they find each other and they help each other. It's
mm-hmm.
wonderful. I see it in here every day. It's
mm-hmm.
cute. It really is. I mean, some of it doesn't even look like that's what's going on, but it is.
Uh-huh.
Because I've watched them go pick up a journal and write a word or something in it or something,
uh-huh.
you know, and just little things.
Mm-hmm. Is science has to be here, like a science project? Do you think that's what I want to ask is, you know, like self-confidence and learn to how to help each other, and just...
The science pulls it together.
Mm.
It gives the place a purpose, almost like an excuse. Let's take the kids to a fog neck and have them go down, have some elder take them down the beach and get an octopus,
mm-hmm.
and how to catch it, what to do with it, how to cook it, eat it,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, and the process involved,
mm-hmm.
so that, and then of course you're always telling the kids, you know, that there's a process for everything,
mm-hmm.
not just catching a fish or anything. There's a process for buying a house,
mm-hmm.
process for changing a tire on a car,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And you know, if they don't have enough common sense to start with,
mm-hmm.
I think this kind of thing develops some common sense, I
mm-hmm.
think,
mm-hmm.
and they realize that you know, figuring stuff out isn't so hard. You just got to stop and think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. That's
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm. great. I think you've given me a lot of thoughts already. Do you see any other values in this?
We try to teach them personal hygiene.
Yeah, like banya.
Banya. Wash your hands before you eat.
Uh huh. They love banya, don't they?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
They love,
and there's always a few. They're right in that age where the parents say, "Well, every other day is okay." Well, I don't think so here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I make Patrick take one every day.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's staying at our house, he has a shower every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure he knew how to shower,
mm-hmm.
because I went in with him and I helped him, and I explained to him very bluntly that we're all the same as guys, and you know, you got to be clean and etc. And I, of course, when they get older, the more important it gets to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're all going to live in the same room together, I don't want some kid in here that hasn't had a banya since he's been here and go stay in some other tent somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Not interested. And I've told that to a few of them.
Uh-huh.
And I think, for example,
mm-hmm.
you know, you brush your teeth
mm-hmm.
today? No. Well, mm-hmm. go brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how? I will go to the mess hall, get a paper cup, get some water out of that tap over there, brush your teeth. If you don't have toothpaste, you can borrow some of mine,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, not very successful getting them to keep their stuff picked up, and they go swimming and with their clothes on, and of course they just walk in and throw their stuff under the bunk or whatever they do, but that takes a little more work. Teaching them to take care of their clothes and
mm-hmm.
stuff. Another year, a couple of years older, that'd be easier to teach them that.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, they're kind of wanting to do it on their own anyway, because the gals like a kid that's
uh-huh.
kind of more presentable.
So. Mm-hmm. Is that, is compared to that sort of when you were a boy, your surrounding is naturally like this. There's no distraction basically, like TV or stuff like that. And then you had to keep on working on something, or you had to play, go out and stuff.
Right.
And then and there are lots of relatives around you, so maybe living closer teach you how to drive a skiff or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. and how to use a knife and mm-hmm. things. In Kodiak, is that true that those things are not there anymore? Is that, I mean,
not very much. It's Kodiak is local people that were born and raised in Kodiak are a minority by quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Asian community, Hispanic communities, are South Sea Islanders. There's an awful lot of them in Kodiak anymore. For a small town, I don't know how many people there are in Kodiak, but I would say 7,000-8,000. And most of them are outsiders, you know, from somewhere else. And
so there's no sense of sort of small community?
That's gone. Mm-hmm. And it was gone a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It started disappearing in the 60s
mm-hmm.
when the king crab boom started and all that. All the outsiders started moving in, and there was money to be made, so they start moving in and building houses and going into business and so forth.
Right.
So the simple life started disappearing
mm-hmm.
pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
which always disappoints me. I always wish everybody would go home and it would be a small town again, but it'll never happen. You know, one of the biggest, the saddest thing, and it happens in Japan, it happens everywhere, you have to go somewhere else to make a living anymore.
Yeah.
The villages around the island are just disappearing. Mm-hmm. They're not disappearing, but they're getting smaller and smaller
mm-hmm.
because there's no economy there mm-hmm. for people. You know, they can't live a subsistence lifestyle anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very few. There's some do. Very few.
Mm. You mean you cannot make money out of subsistence?
Right. And you have to have money for shells for your rifle, or for a rifle to start with. So you, somewhere along the line, you have to earn money. Whether it's trapping and selling skins or whatever it is. And there's enough money in most of that anymore to do it. So, and then, you know, as time is going by, fishing is less lucrative. So I talk to a lot of people that I see in Anchorage, for example, and they're from Port Lions. Or they're from Old Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And they wind up, some younger guy that, you know, and a younger wife, and maybe have a kid or two, they get up to Anchorage, they get into construction, running heavy equipment or being a carpenter, and they start doing really good, and they stay sober, and they start buying a house, and then they get their parents to come up and stay with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents wind up watching the kids while they're both of them are working and sending.
Mm-hmm.
So it draws a lot of people out of these
mm-hmm.
these villages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty steady, you know, I know people in Port Lions and Old Harbor, it's amazing how many trips they'll make in a year sometimes just to go up and visit their kids or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And I didn't realize that until I actually come to this camp and start talking to people,
mm-hmm.
and I said, well, yeah, well, after camp, I'm going to Anchorage for a couple of weeks or a month or something like that. I know why, you know, we're all going up to stay with your kid or something.
Oh, I see.
And very, very, and they'll take up a couple boxes of smoked salmon or something for
mm-hmm.
them, or canned fish or something,
mm-hmm.
you know. The connection's there, mm-hmm. but it's just moving in different directions.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, like your grandchildren visit you quite often, Patrick and Tatiana.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said that Tatiana just loves
mm-hmm.
grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is sort of a difference? It's not enough for grandchildren to just visit and then sort of, you know, spend time with grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough for them to learn certain things.
One of the things that I notice with all three of my children when they bring their kids over is they're having a hard time understanding why the kids listen to their grandma and grandpa and not to them, the parents.
Mm. Oh.
And I said, that's something you have to figure out on your own.
Uh-huh.
Because my kids listen to me.
Oh.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Uh-huh.
And I have to be very honest. One of the reasons that I feel discipline is so important is because I was the worst brat of anybody else I ever grew up with or I ever knew. I was the sixth
uh-huh.
of six kids.
Uh-huh.
My mother was almost 41 years old when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a year and a half younger than her.
Mm-hmm.
And having three brothers and a sister that are almost old enough to be my parents, I was spoiled rotten.
You were
really bad.
Okay, really bad.
And the thing about this whole thing is I remember a lot of that stuff. I remember going into a restaurant downtown with my aunt
mm-hmm.
and one of my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to have a hamburger. Well, I didn't know what a hamburger was.
Mm-hmm.
And I want cornflakes. Well, they didn't have cornflakes. And the thing is, I remember this restaurant
mm-hmm.
because the people that ran it lived in a house right behind the restaurant.
Right.
The waitress was the wife of the guy that was doing the cooking. She ran out the back door to her house and got some cornflakes and brought it down, and I had a bowl of cornflakes while my aunt and my cousin had their lunch, whatever.
Right.
And I didn't ask nice. I said, that's what I want. And I mean, I said it. I didn't talk very nice.
Oh.
And I got away with it.
Right.
And nobody, I never had a spanking. My mom chased me with a broom a few times. And I at least laugh, and then, my mom. But I learned how to behave on my own. I never sassed my uncles or my brothers.
Oh.
But my oldest sister took me everywhere with her.
Right.
And I got whatever I wanted from. If we'd go in downtown to the store and I saw a cap gun or a
uh-huh.
truck or something, and I'd throw a fit and start crying. And she'd buy it for me.
Wow. How old were you, when you went to that restaurant? As long as you remember.
6, 7, 8 years old,
right.
10 years old.
Oh, okay.
And I would say I was probably I was probably 11 or 12 before I started wising up a little bit. And when I hit 13, I really started because, man, I was a teenager and some of these girls were very interesting. I didn't know why yet, but I was sure
uh-huh.
trying to figure it out.
Uh-huh.
And so I really started changing like most guys do, I guess. I don't know. Most guys do. And I was so busy worrying about myself, I don't remember about the
right.
other guys.
Uh-huh.
As I grew older, there was a lot of alcohol influence in my family.
Mm.
And on both sides of my family. Not my mom. But I really started figuring out why things were so tough at home so much.
Mm-hmm.
Why we went without a lot of things.
Mm.
And it wasn't because there wasn't enough income. It was income was spent for the wrong things.
Oh, I see.
And So anyway, I figured it out, and I started working when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think that's when I really started developing my line of thinking about growing up and being so serious all the time.
Mm.
I refused to I refused to fall into that the lifestyle that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
I just no way I was going to do that. And I wanted to get married, and I wanted to have kids. And I wanted a family to take care of. And I made up my mind that I wasn't going to allow my kids to be like I was.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to learn manners and a little discipline. And they were going to get... I never got a hug when I was a kid.
Oh, by your parents?
By my dad. Mm-hmm. Dad didn't believe in that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or my uncles either. Or mm-hmm. my brothers.
They all
treated me, men don't cry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So I grew up like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I made up my mind that that's not the way I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I learned, and you know, I just like in the village or anywhere else, you got to be tough and all this stuff. Well, I found out that I was.
Mm-hmm.
As time went by.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody really close to me died or something,
mm-hmm.
I found out that I wasn't a weakling because I cried at the funeral or something.
Mm-hmm.
That had nothing to do with my masculinity or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured it out, and I said, okay, this ain't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So my kids, every day I told them I loved them, every day I hugged them, every day I sat and talked to them, I played with my kids
mm-hmm.
when I came home from work. If nothing else, that boot there, we'd wad up some Kleenex and see who could make the most baskets from here.
Uh-huh.
And things like that,
really?
All the time.
Do you want something, Patrick, from...
No. What do you, you know, and stuff like that.
Mm.
And my wife is exactly the same way.
Mm.
She came from a big family, mm. didn't have anything. And the biggie that kept us together, as we look back, was we were opposite, but we both wanted families and security, and the security was a good partner
mm.
that was dependable and so forth. And so we, you know, so we've had that.
Mm. So basically you have been doing to your kids almost opposite what you were done.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's interesting.
Because I remember one time at home, I must have been 20 years old, maybe 19. I remember I was talking to my dad one time, and he was really mad at me. For nothing, the way I looked at it anyway. And I says, you know, I don't understand why you're so mad at me. I said, Dad, I love you. And he looked at me and I thought, he thinks I'm queer because he said I love him. I mean,
oh,
he just stared right through me.
Mm.
I'll never forget that. And I thought, hey, man, you know, I guess you don't understand what I'm saying.
Mm.
You don't get it. And
oh,
and so I thought about that, and you know, he never even, and I thought about it, I still do. He never ever even told me he liked me.
Mm.
So I thought, I'm gonna make sure that my kids don't have an excuse to say that they didn't know if I cared about them or not, because
mm.
I'm going to make darn sure they know. And not just by telling them I love them, I'm going to show them
mm.
by the way I treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still showing them.
Right. I thought all those, you know, like big families,
mm-hmm.
I've seen in the villages, and especially old days, I thought people were just living so close, and they really care for each other, and they're just full of love, and you know, all those things.
Well, you look at Olga and her sister. They had a tough life.
As well?
And tougher than mine, by a long shot. And they can be together and sing and do stuff together, and they work hard, and they don't even have to talk, but they're together, and you can see that, boy, that's probably how they got through a lot of hard times, was they just learned to be close, and Olga has five daughters, and they're the same way. It's interesting. But I absolutely, and I thought a lot about, am I doing the right thing and so forth. And I'm different. It's right, even here at camp, I like to be alone a lot. That's the way I am, because I didn't fit in high school especially. I didn't fit in with the other groups because I didn't like the partying. I always felt that girls should be treated with a great deal of respect and so forth. I didn't like guys swearing around girls. And I always had a hard time with that. So I didn't get invited to the parties.
Right.
And I was a star in a basketball team.
Wow.
You know, back in those days. For 2 years. And I was a, you know, class president. I was president of Letterman's Club. I was one of the I was on a student council.
So you were never short of friends anyway, even though you didn't go partying
out? I had friends, but the friends that I grew up with from the time we were small, when we got into high school, the split started coming because I wouldn't go drinking with them all the time. I went once in a while, I'd go with them, but they wanted to fight, or they wanted to crash somebody's party or something like that. And I said, no way, you know. I mean, you know, what, and my attitude then was they wanted to fight, and I said, well, I don't want to hurt you, because that's what's going to happen. I mean, you know, I mean, just because you're drunk, you know, you're being kind of stupid, because you know I'll hurt you, and I don't want to do that. You know, you're my friend. I don't understand. You know, you want to fight someone that maybe that you don't know or something. And of course, I had to take a lot of flack over that kind of stuff. So I wasn't very popular, because everybody was growing up. Everybody was having a good time, and I wasn't. If they took me with them, they wouldn't enjoy themselves as much. So I spent a lot of time reading books, listening to my Chet Atkins records or something, and I learned that with my attitude, I was going to spend time alone. That's the way it was. I wasn't very popular with the girls either, because I didn't know it at the time, but I realized afterwards that they were growing up too, and they were looking for a good time. And I just didn't have a clue. My sisters and my brothers were way older than me, so they had already long gone through that. So they were all gone, so I didn't have anybody. Sister, brother, home to tune me into some of this stuff, you know. So
I see.
And now, of course, all the guys that grew up with it went through all this. A lot of them turned into alcoholics. Some of them are dead now. And matter of fact, I'm curious if a couple of guys I grew up with all the way through are coming to this camp later on. I don't know if they are or not, because if they were, they wouldn't tell me. But you know, I look at. I don't know how you judge success or anything. I have no idea. But I know, in my life, I've been very successful. Life has been good to me. I've had a plan and I stuck with it, and it's worked for me. I don't care about anybody else. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I are still partners and friends, and that's my kids walk in the door and have a nap on the couch or whatever they want to do. I mean, they make themselves at home like they always did. Mm-hmm. So that's
normally, you know, when young people get trapped into mm-hmm. alcohol or drug everywhere in the world, mm-hmm. that's a teenager's, you know, psychology to be with group. You know, they don't want to be left alone, and so they tend to go that way. You know, when somebody who has a big voice is saying something or doing something, mm-hmm. it's better to follow them and form a group. It's kind mm-hmm. of security, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And right. teenagers right. sometimes right. as well. So it's very difficult, for you. I mean, it's difficult for anybody to stand alone like you did. Mm-hmm. You have to be very tough and strong.
And I think about it. I mean, I used to sit up. I remember sit in my room upstairs, beautiful view of downtown from my upstairs window, and I was really lonely. I mean, I really was. Mm-hmm. But I was never so lonely that I'd go do something that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I always, no matter what, I learned to accept that's the way it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's all right. You know, I mean, I'm not going to give in to. I'm going to say no. And I was back then. I was not ever. I was always very sure when I said no. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I don't know how many fights I broke up. Mm-hmm. How many guys I helped or people I helped. My peers and stuff. And, you know, it was most of the time wasn't even acknowledged. But that I don't care. I'm not sure I helped anyone, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know. I tried to look out for my buddies. So.
What you want to make sure that kids learn in this camp?
Confidence, have confidence in themselves. Make up their own mind. Don't let someone make it up for you. If you have a big decision to make, sleep on it. Spend one, just go home and go to bed and sleep one night before you make a decision that you're afraid of. You're afraid if you do or you're afraid if you don't. Sleep on it. Don't step into something unless it feels right. Mm-hmm. And they get a little bit of that here. I think there's a little bit of that here that they can pick up on. But boy, that's one of the things I always tell my kids, and I tell Patrick, anybody. I say, hey, you know, you really have a big decision to make, whether it's should I ask that girl for a date, or should I ask mom if I can have my money for my new bike? If you're not sure, sleep on it one time, and, you know, and then things will fall into place and you'll have the answer when you get up in the morning, usually. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that's the way I see it.
Oh, I'll take that advice too.
There's a young man in town, he's pushing 40. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of kids. And I had one of the nicest compliments I've ever had in my life. He was one of my little dribblers, basketball players.
Okay.
And he was a wonderful athlete. Actually, still is. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the, just about the best kid on my team. But he works in town, and he works at one of the oil companies in town. And went down there to fuel up a boat one time, and he was there. And I was talking to him, standing on the dock, and he says, you know, he still calls me Mr. Molly. Mm-hmm. He says, I always remember you. He says, you know, you were the first guy in my life that ever said no to me. And he came from a big family. They were all good athletes, mm-hmm. tough, you know. And, And their dad wanted them, he wanted them to fight each other all the time and stuff. And I hate that. But anyway, I kicked him out of the gym in the middle of a ball game one time. And I said, hey, you know, I'm the coach. We want to win if we can. You do as you're told. You play as a team member, not as just one guy. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to listen and behave yourself, I don't want to hear any of the swearing or any of the taking a swing at somebody or any of this. I'm not putting up with it. And anyway, he kind of couldn't control himself one game. Mm-hmm. I took him out of the game and I said, get your stuff and get out of the gym, all the way out of the gym. And when the game was over, he was sitting outside, anxiously waiting to see who won. never got out of line again. And he told me, like I said, this was, I'd say 2 years ago. He finally told me, he says, you were the first one in my life that ever said no to me. And he said he always appreciated that. He said it made him stop and think.
Oh, that's good, eh?
That, matter of fact, he went through alcoholism for a while. Mm. And turned out to be pretty good guy. Doing a good job raising his family.
That's nice.
So, anyway, things like that. And every single one of my kids that were on my basketball teams, still, when they see me, they come and talk to me. And it's wonderful. And they all had a good time. And, you know, didn't matter if they were any good or not. They got to play. That was the object of the whole thing. Or not, they got to play. That was the object of the whole thing. Was right. To play.
Not to win.
Well, right. First of all, was to play. The second thing was to play as good as you can. And if you're no good, you're no good. I mean, you know, maybe you're a good soccer player or a good fisherman, but you're not a good basketball player. Well, most of them weren't that good. Mm-hmm. But they got to play, and I always used to tell them, you know, we may never win a game, but don't ever give it to them. Make them work for it. Mm-hmm. Try hard to beat them. We know we're not going to beat those guys because they're all a foot taller than you guys, but and they're much better. But don't just let them win. Make them work for it. Man, that was fun.
How long did you have that team?
Hmm?
How long did you coach basketball?
How many years?
Yeah, how many?
Oh, let's see. My oldest son started when he was 9.
Oh, okay.
So 9, 10, 11, 12. And Terry was, so I must have coached for 6 or 7 years.
Oh, right.
And then the year after I quit coaching, some mothers called me one evening. They had boys that weren't very good basketball players, and the boys never got to play. They were on different teams.
Right.
And they said, would you coach our kids if the little dribblers people would let us have another team? And I said, heck yeah. And so I did.
Oh, is that?
And I had 7 boys that never got to play in the teams they were on. We never won a game.
Right.
The closest we ever came was in a tournament. We lost by 1 point.
Oh.
At the end of the game, the boys were crying. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so we got our little huddle, you know, and I was talking to him, and tears were just pouring down. It's just, and then they said, Coach, we'll get them next year. And I always remember that. Uh-huh. And one of those boys got killed in a car wreck when he was about, I'd say they were about 10 years old then, and he died in a car wreck when he was about 15 or something like that. And I still think about that, and that really tickled me. And I coach girls too. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, the team Terry was on, we won all our games in the league and won the tournament.
Really?
Yeah, really. And we didn't have the best player on our team. But as a matter of fact, one of the girls on that team married the guy I was telling you about to thank me for saying no to him.
Oh,
they got
right?
married, and they wound up having like 6 kids so far,
oh,
or something
wow.
like that. But I had, for example, I had a girl on that team that was really quick. She had a heart murmur, and she couldn't run for very long. Well, one of the best girls in the league was a really quick gal.
Mm.
But this gal I had on my team was quicker. She couldn't play basketball worth a darn, but she was quicker. So I figured out how to use her uh-huh. against this really quick, good player
uh-huh.
so that she wasn't such a good player.
Wow.
Because nothing's worse than having this girl that can't play slap the ball out of a girl's hands that knows how to play.
Mm-hmm.
It unnerves them a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I just figured all that stuff
wow.
out, and it was wonderful.
That's great.
Great team.
Well, maybe last question about this camp. Do you think this camp, this sort of camp, is necessary for kids?
Yes. I think with the lack of discipline, the lack of discipline at home and at school, and most of it's lack at home, starts at home. I think that this camp helps, maybe in a very small way, it gives the kids opportunity to find out a little discipline.
Mm-hmm.
They learn how to do chores.
Mm-hmm.
They learn how, it's one more opportunity for them to do something as a group
mm-hmm.
and as an individual, because they have their own project.
Right.
They have to try and figure out how to do that project on their own. But of course with help, someone, teacher, somebody's going to help. And I think that any little thing, because I can think back in my life, and I learned something from almost everybody I ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was kindness, or how to tie a knot, or how, you know, a game to see how far you could spit. I mean, it seemed like everybody has something to teach everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's always one or two of these kids is going to use something he learned in his camp. And maybe the success rate isn't, the percentages aren't that high, maybe, I don't know. But a lot of kids talk about this camp that have gone to it. And, you know, a lot of them probably don't like it, I don't know. But I think that there's, if a kid picks up one positive thing, like learning how to sweep the floor in a mess hall, that helps that kid the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have him go in there and help him wash dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody finally taught him how to wash dishes. Because it's amazing, it's, you know, I always say, you know, Patrick, go clean the windows. Maybe nobody ever showed him how to clean the windows.
Mm.
It's a long process learning how to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways they learn is by observing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he never had a chance to observe.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody goes out and shows him
mm-hmm.
a few times, he'll start figuring it out. And here, I think they get that opportunity. Cleaning the outhouse. man alive, 99% of the people you meet in this world, oh no, I can't do that. You find out there's nothing to it, no big deal. But, you know, if nobody ever tells them they're going to do it whether they like it or not, they're never going to want to do it. So, didn't hurt them a bit. They don't get sick or any, their hand doesn't fall off because they clean the toilet or something, you know. Well, it's a simple thing, but it's amazing how long in a person's life some of these kids go and before they figure it out, you know, and they can learn it here when they're young. Mm-hmm. Life goes on. They can go up to higher things.
Mm-hmm. Just one last thing. You know, this camp also talks about tradition and Aleutic culture, mm-hmm. and identity. Mm-hmm. Do you see that aspect here happening too?
Yeah, to a certain degree. Like I said earlier, one of the things that I read about, for example, is and it's something that I figured out about myself was the elder thing. Now, when I grew up, all the old ladies were grandmas. Mm-hmm. I mean, we called them grandma.
Oh, I see.
And they weren't my grandma.
Right. Uh-huh.
Because they were older people. Mm-hmm. And I was brought up, I was Russian Orthodox, I was an altar boy for 4 years and so forth. Mm-hmm. And on Easter, for example, there was a routine. Like we went and exchanged Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. I went to every one of my aunt's houses. I went to the old Staruchas in town who were not related, Mrs. Hubley, Mrs. Anderson, Mrs. Kerr, and so forth. And I never questioned what that had to do with my family. I went there and I was treated as one of their own, and I felt that they were my aunt. Or my grandma or something, because they treated me that way, so so my response to that was my grandma.
Right.
And I never thought about it. I mean, it wasn't a complicated question or issue. It was, I accepted it. Mm-hmm. And what it boiled down to, it was respect for your elders is what it really boiled down to. Mm-hmm. And it was courteous and respectful to go see old people because they probably didn't have a lot of traffic of kids and people running in and out of their house, and they probably missed it. Mm-hmm. So, like my mom would make sure that I went to so-and-so's house. Mm-hmm. And I never thought about it till long afterwards, and I thought back on it, and I thought, that was really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, that really was. That's neat. Because they get old and crippled up, and maybe even a little grouchy, doesn't mean you quit going to see them or care about them. And I think this camp with the older people and everything here, it gives these kids a chance to be with a young, aggressive teacher, and with one of us. I don't think I'm so old yet. I guess I guess I'm starting to get that way. But they can also deal with one of us that really is more casual about stuff and say, you know, it's no big deal. Don't get so shook up over it. You're not gonna flunk today. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Whittle. There's lots of wood. We'll split some more wood for you. And you can start again tomorrow. Don't worry about it. And we'll sharpen your knife for you. Uh-huh. So I think it's. It's kind of like I said, there were a lot of guys, older guys, that were in an uncle category, that weren't uncles, that took me for a boat ride, showed me how they pull the crab pot, showed me how to start their outboard motor, took me duck hunting. And So here, it's kind of the same thing. We're not related or anything. I'm not anybody's other's grandpa besides Patrick's or anything. But it's like Gil. Mm-hmm. He's Patrick's buddy. Mm-hmm. I've been around him quite a bit the last few years. Mm-hmm. And he's a good kid, and I go hug him, mm-hmm. you know. And he's real bashful and stuff, but he's a nice kid. Mm-hmm. And his mother and dad are Mexicans, mm-hmm. and they're U.S. citizens, mm-hmm. and they're really trying hard to have him and his sister grow up to be good people, very strict with him. Mm-hmm. And so it's I'm not related to him, mm-hmm. but I want him to know that I'd be very happy to help him along if I can,
right.
You know, remind him. And he's very courteous and everything. Mm-hmm. And he's like that all the time. Mm-hmm. He's a little mischief, which is good, mm-hmm. because I think I think in this world, the way it's getting more and more, a person has to learn to be a little more aggressive just to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. But just like there, it's got to be a balance, you know.
But do you kind of try to do the same for the other boys and girls? Like, it can be a grandpa of others? Or you...
I feel very comfortable. For example, we go to Port Lions last winter, mm-hmm. to the, I was a judge at the science fair.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I felt very comfortable in the evening going out on a basketball court and shooting around with the kids, mm-hmm. playing basketball.
Right.
And, and talking to them.
Uh-huh.
And with all of them, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if I could tell right away whether a kid was willing to listen to me so I could show him how to make a lay-in or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so. Or if they were in one of the classrooms or living in a school, they were maybe in a computer room, mm-hmm. and I'd go in there and watch them playing a game on a computer or something and visit with them and let them explain to me how to play the game,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty good response most of the time. Mm-hmm. Very seldom anything else. And I've always tried to be real careful.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want any of the kids, because the way things are, I didn't want any of the kids to ever think that I was a bad guy or anything, or a, you know, mm-hmm. like little kids or anything. I wanted to make sure they understood that I was a grandpa type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trust me, I'll lay down my life for you if I have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not. If you don't feel comfortable with me around, that's fine. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. You know, you really don't have to be afraid of me. I'm not bad. Because it's amazing. These kids are taught, you know, don't ever talk to strangers.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. It's I can understand. They need to.
Yeah.
A lot of bad people in this world.
Mm.
But I feel bad because I very sincerely love children, because before they're all fouled up from our society. And I feel bad when they act afraid of me or something.
Right.
And I feel bad because I think that little girl or that little boy doesn't realize that if some guy came along and tried to grab him or something, I mean, clumsy and as old as I'm getting, I'd do what I could to help him right then and there. I mean, and I've actually walked up to a situation and that didn't look right to me.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while that happens.
Right.
And I feel bad that mm-hmm. that kids are afraid of me or shy away from me or something.
Yeah.
Or I'll meet them on the bike trail when I'm walking, and I'll say good morning or something, and they'll just look straight ahead. And I always think to myself, it's okay, you know, I understand what you're thinking, and yeah, I don't want to be afraid of me.
Maybe that's why this kind of setting is important. Like, it's a family atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't have to be afraid of mm-hmm. anybody. Nobody's really a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that a lot of people knew each other, like relatives,
mm-hmm.
Or knew that person's grandpa or
right.
you know, mother
right.
or something.
Right.
So I said, oh wow, you know, this is...
It's a connection.
Yeah.
And I'll walk up to one of these kids and I'll say, well, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll tell me, and I'll say, well, who's your dad and mom? And maybe they'll have the right last name, but I don't recognize the first name. And I'll say, well, who's your grandpa or grandma or something?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll find out that their great-grandchildren are something of somebody I knew
right.
that
uh-huh.
that's my age.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell them that.
Uh-huh.
And I'll say, yeah, well, I met him in Kodiak when we went to school together, or I met him in Port Bailey when I worked in the cannery, or whatever, you know. And all of a sudden there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's neat, you know.
Yeah, it is.
It is, so.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason that the kids can be so free, feeling
mm-hmm.
free here, because, again, as you say, they're away from parents. That's
mm-hmm.
a pretty scary thing for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But because they know somebody, are relatives, or you know, they're surrounded by people who know their families.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of the reason they can be sort of, they can feel free rather quickly. They don't have to be intimidated all the time.
Another thing, and it's probably most grown-ups that are involved with children and groups and so forth, is that here in this camp, every one of us, older people, including you, we're all kind of keeping an eye on the kids to make sure they're okay. If somebody starts crying, all of a sudden everybody shows up. But no matter where these kids are, they're almost always in sight of one of us, and we're always kind of just keeping tabs on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that making sure they're safe and everything. And in Kodiak, that's the way it was. Everywhere I went, everybody knew who I was.
No.
Well, you're Tatiana's boy. Or something. And if something didn't look right, I'd say, well, you better get home or something like that.
Oh.
You're not supposed to be doing that or something.
Uh-huh.
And I think about it the way I grew up. I don't know if I'd let my boys go in a skiff alone and be gone all day like I did.
Mm-hmm. Like you did.
I mean, we were out of sight. We would, before the boat harbors in Kodiak and before there was anything on Near Island, we'd go in a skiff, two of us or something, and we'd row over there because nobody had any outboard motors, so we did all the rowing. And we would go over there and go inside of the other bay over there, and we'd play boats all day over there.
Right.
And nobody'd see us till 6 o'clock in the evening or something like that in the summertime. And nobody ever came over to look for us.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell them where you're going?
Generally, yeah. Well, basically, we say we were going out in a skiff.
Uh-huh.
We didn't. And as we got older, I mean, we even rode to Woody Island from town, which is quite
really?
A ways.
Oh yeah.
But we were practicing, learning how to row when it was a little choppy or something like that, you know, blowing a little bit or something. And so we had to go out where it was choppy so we could learn how to
wow.
to handle it, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's what we did as we got older, not starting off. It's like the Eichahuk. We had, there were skiffs like that.
Uh-huh.
Most of them were bigger than that we practiced in.
Wow.
But that's how we learned.
Uh-huh.
I'd say, well, Uncle Bill, can I borrow your skiff? Go ahead, you know. And it would be high and dry. Well, then us kids would have to figure out how to get it down to the water, you know.
Right, yeah.
And in those days, most of them had a round spruce log or something
mm-hmm.
in the bow.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have to lift the stern up, get that roller under there, and then roll it down the beach, and then lift it up again and put it under and roll it down again. And, you know, we saw them do it,
uh-huh.
and so we had to figure out how, you know, could you guys come and help us so we could get the skiff down? And maybe we, two of us, couldn't do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought about that over and over and over again, about my boys and what I have let them do that. I'd be scared to let them do that.
Oh, sure.
But we never thought anything about it. It was just as natural as riding a bike.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Owen.
You're welcome.